The Tiny and Fiery Aisling O'Reilly, written by J.J. Zelling, narrated by Aaron Miller. Aisling O'Reilly watches the shimmer portal twist and writhe in front of her. Though still uncertain how long it will stay open, she's more than certain this final step needs to be taken before the opportunity vanishes. She glances down at Clover, her longtime friend and guardian. The stuffed green bear does not look back at her. He never does. But having him there gives her the strength she needs. Most would say that she's still too young to be entering the human realm, but Aisling disagrees. With Clover at her side, she's ready for anything. She sets her jaw, shakes off the last of her nerves, and leaps through the iridescent vortex. Aisling is on a very specific mission tonight. Follow the plump and pompous Billy O'Connor and find out where he's been going each night with those sacks of seeds that his greedy, good-for-nothing family has been growing for the humans. She doesn't blame the O'Connors entirely, of course. Like any good leprechaun would, she knows her folk will fill their pots of gold in any way they can. For decades, though, Aisling has watched the O'Connors take advantage of her parents. Bit by bit, they've been buying up all the shamrock fields, paying with copper instead of gold, then setting them ablaze to make room for more of their garish red poppies. The once vast and verdant fields that her ancestors had tended for centuries are now little more than a few meager acres that surround her family's crumbling home. The humans don't seem to need their lucky charms anymore. It feels like more and more of the Fae are being forced to turn away from tradition and earn their gold in other ways. Billy says that instead of chasing rainbows, the humans would rather chase the dragon. That worries Aisling for a couple of reasons. Not just for the threat it possesses to her family's financial security, but also the fact that humans might be hunting dragons again. If they've started chasing the Fae folk, who might be next? That's a problem for another day. Today, it's about finding out what they're doing with those seeds that makes them so valuable. Every day, Billy trots by with his nose in the air and another sack of seeds thrown over his shoulder. Every day, he teases her about her family's threadbare clothes and their ramshackle house. Today is the day she's finally deciding to do something about it. When Aisling's feet emerge from the portal and hit solid ground, it becomes immediately apparent that she's not in the rolling fields of the Fae realm anymore. The sun does not bathe her with its warm and welcoming rays, and the air does not carry the scents of cinnamon and lilacs on the breeze. Instead, the air here is stale and smells like burnt rubber and compost. The silhouettes of tall, square buildings surround her on every side, hiding the stars from view while covering her and Clover in cold, dark shadows. She pulls her green bear close, suddenly feeling less brave than she had a moment ago.
"Don't chicken out now, Clover,"
she says, leveling an accusatory stare at the bear and prodding the four-leafed shamrock embroidered on his belly.
"If we turn back now, we'll never know the truth."
Clover does not offer a rebuttal, not when he knows she means business. Voices in the distance pierce the veil of silence and startle Aisling. She darts for cover and slowly peeks around the corner of the building just in time to see Billy disappearing into a warehouse across the road. A sliver of panic urges her forward, not wanting to lose track of him in this unfamiliar realm, but the humans standing guard with dangerous-looking weapons keep her rooted firmly in place.
"We'll have to find another way in, Clover. There's no way we're getting past those two without being seen."
Standing 35 inches tall, 3 inches shorter than her father, and 9 inches shorter than the row of crates beside her, Aisling sneaks along the darkest side of the warehouse. She's aiming for the row of windows she's spotted along a second-floor catwalk and slows to a stop at the base of a drain pipe leading straight to them.
89 years of climbing trees in the grove has prepared us for this moment, Clover. Did you bring it?
Clover does not hand her the green ribbon tied in a bow around his neck, but Aisling's nimble fingers find it all the same. She tucks Clover into her satchel and tames her mane of fiery red hair before starting her climb. Once atop the steel walkway, Aisling peers into the warehouse through the filthy windows to find rows and rows of tables lying neatly on the warehouse floor. Fey folk of every kind are tied to the tables and working with piles of dull brown powder. Gnomes with face masks chop at the powder with little cleavers, kicking puffs of dust into the air. Elves wearing gloves weigh the finely cut mounds on small scales before dumping each pile into a clear plastic bag. A pair of leprechauns that look very familiar to Aisling wrap the bags into tight little bricks before stacking each bundle onto a pallet. Aisling notices that all the fey folk look rather thin and sad, as if none of them want to be here. She also can't help but notice how many more humans with guns are wandering around them, keeping a close eye on her kin.
Looks like we aren't the only ones being taken advantage of, Clover.
Clover does not voice his agreement in the matter, but she accepts his silence as a somber acknowledgement of this awful truth. Now that she has a better view, Aisling scans the room for Billy. It's a big building, but Billy's shrill, taunting voice is hard to miss. She finds him quickly, near the far corner of the warehouse, speaking to one of the humans. Billy scoops the last of the gold coins off the table between them and shakes the human's hand. He turns to leave, but not before gesturing with the middle finger to the older leprechauns as he goes. That's when it clicks in Aisling's mind.
Mr. and Miss McCready,
Aisling exclaims with a frantic whisper.
Clover, I know who they are. The O'Connors bought up the last of their fields, too, just before they disappeared last year. If Billy knows they're missing and hasn't told anyone where they are, that can't be a good sign. We need to get back and tell my parents before Billy traps us here.
Aisling scampers back to the drain pipe and swings out over the abyss once again. She only makes it halfway down before a sharp metallic ping from above sends a wave of icy fear down Aisling's spine. She looks up to find the support brackets sailing past her and the top section of piping following close behind. Her world tips as the rest of the drain falls away from the building and crumples into a heap of twisted metal below. A series of echoing clangs, the kind only hollow metal tubes can muster, ring out into the night for everyone to hear. Aisling only has enough time to scramble free of the wreckage and find her footing before the blinding glare of a flashlight finds her and more guards are alerted.
Stop right there! Don't move! Hands up! Get on the ground now!
Too frightened to flee, Aisling tries to shade her eyes from the intense white light and blinks away the blotches in her vision as rough hands grab her by both arms.
Check her for weapons. Search the bag.
This is not part of the plan, and she can't help but feel incredibly stupid as her new reality comes crashing down around her. Aisling's face and chest hit the cold pavement hard as she's shoved to the ground. She cries out in pain as one of the guards rips her satchel free from her shoulder.
Please stop, she pleads. You're hurting me.
A great weight presses down hard between her shoulder blades, making it almost impossible to breathe. Something warm touches her arm, but she's being held too tightly to look.
There's just a teddy bear in here. No weapons.
one of the guards says above her. He tosses Clover to the ground in front of Aislinn. She meets his unblinking gaze and catches a faint green glow inside his eyes as her own eyes start to blur with sudden tears.
"What have I done, Clover?"
she whispers to him. Clover does not comfort her. He never does. But why should he? It's her fault they're both in this mess after all. One of the guards starts roughly patting down her legs and lower back before calling to the others.
"She's clear. Get her up."
The guard with his knee on her back hauls her up to her feet, and she's once again blinded by the brilliant white light.
"She looks like one of them," the guard with the flashlight says. "Let's get her inside. The boss can decide what to do with her."
The guard holding her gives her a hard shove and snickers.
"Another ginger dwarf for his collection. Hey, maybe we'll get some of that gold as a finder's fee."
Aislinn's paralysis finally shatters, picturing herself strapped to one of those tables and forced to work. Like a window in a house fire, her rage and fear explodes outward with the same sudden ferocity. She flails and screams and tries to run, but no matter how fiery she tries to be, she is still very tiny. To the humans, she's nothing more than a child throwing a temper tantrum. They laugh at the futility of her effort, just as one of them hits her in the stomach with the butt of his gun. Her world tilts once again, but rather than falling, she's hoisted up by her arms and pushed onwards. Aislinn stumbles and retches, desperately trying to suck in a fresh lungful of air when that warm sensation on her arm turns into an icy burn. Beneath the vice-like grip of the guard's hand and beneath the torn sleeve of her once favorite shirt, the lines of her labyrinth tattoo start to glow a fierce emerald green. The light erupts from her arm, and the guard pulling her along stumbles away, yelping in surprise.
"What is that?" he cries out. "What's she doing?"
The flashlight is on her again, like a spotlight blotting out everything else around her. Everything but the overwhelming glow of her blessing. It happened so long ago that she had forgotten the words spoken to her by her father when she was very young, but as the light emanating from her arm continues to grow in intensity, the memory comes flooding back.
"Your mother and I may not always be there to protect you, Aislinn. Though us O'Connors are a tough bunch, we're still among the smallest of folk, so I'm passing on a blessing that your grandmother gave to me. A blessing of protection by the old magics. Hopefully you'll never need it, but if you do, just know that it will always be there watching over you."
The guards around her take a step back, their attention shifting to something behind her. She turns to find a small stuffed teddy bear with glowing green eyes watching them.
"Clover,"
she says with the first gulp of fresh air she can find. He turns to meet her gaze just as a thunderclap tears through the sky above them and a bolt of green lightning tracing through the crisp night air finds its target. When the momentary flash fades and Aislinn's sight returns, she's shocked to find that her small and soft companion is gone. In his place is a massive green grizzly bear with bristling crystalline fur that glistens in the moonlight. He stands on his hind legs, reaching his full height of at least 9 feet, and bellows a roar that shakes Aislinn's bones. Coming from another creature, that warning would have made Aislinn pee herself, but she knows she has nothing to fear from her longtime friend and protector. While the guards around her take a trembling step backwards, Aislinn giggles and skips forward.
"Nice trick, Clover. You should have told me you could do that."
He doesn't apologize to her for keeping secrets, but he does flash a mouthful of glittering teeth in a very Clover-like smile. The click-clack of Clover's onyx claws scraping over one another is the only discernible sound Aisling hears as she takes her place at his side. She turns toward the guards and says,
"I think we'll be going now. Please excuse us."
One of the guards drops his flashlight and brings his weapon to his shoulder. Clover gently tucks Aisling behind himself just as the first gunshot breaks the silence. Aisling scampers away to hide behind the crates as Clover hurtles forward and starts shredding the guards into ribbons. Within seconds, he's moving on, leaving only the nauseating mounds of gore in his wake as he makes his way inside. Gunshots ring out from within the building, but it doesn't take him long to extinguish every scream. Aisling has never seen a dead body before, and it takes every ounce of her will not to vomit when she peeks out from her hiding spot. Keeping her eyes up, she steps wide of the growing pools of blood all around her before circling back to the warehouse door. She pauses outside to prepare herself, gulping down the last of her nausea before entering. She takes one step over the threshold of the dimly lit room and yelps as several figures rush past her through the doorway. The gnomes and the elves didn't seem to want to stick around and disappear into the night. Heart still racing, Aisling turns back to find Clover lumbering over to her with that same toothy grin. She's relieved to see the elderly leprechauns following close behind as well, both laughing as they catch up to Clover.
"Well, now, if that isn't the young Miss O'Reilly, out for a midnight stroll with your familiar, I suppose."
Mr. McGrady pats Clover's flank in thanks.
"That's a proper fine beast you've got there, Aisling. But what's a wee lass like you doing in an awful place like this?"
Aisling offers a curtsy, almost forgetting her manners in front of her elders.
"It's all gone wrong, Mr. McGrady. I came to have a look around and wasn't intended to hurt anyone."
A low growl springs up from Clover as he steps between Aisling and the warehouse door. She leans around Clover to find Billy O'Connor standing wide-eyed in the doorway with another sack of seeds over his shoulder.
What have you done?"
He drops the sack and takes a step backwards, then another.
"I've got to tell Pa what you've done!"
"No!"
Aisling says and rushes to the door in time to see Billy leaping through a shimmering portal back to the glade. Her shoulders slump and she turns back to Mr. and Miss McGrady.
"He's going to tell everyone I killed these people and going to be in so much trouble!"
"Nonsense!"
Mrs. McGrady says, stepping up beside her husband.
"You've just rescued 9 of the Fae and stopped the humans from making more of their poison."
"Poison?"
"Aye. They use the seeds to make a drug that kills half the humans that take it,"
Mr. McGrady says.
"They've kept us hostage for the last year, forcing us to do their dirty work for them. That damned Billy led us here, promising us the last of our gold for the land they stole from us. And we've been stuck here ever since."
"I'm glad you're okay. I can't wait to tell my parents you're not dead."
Aisling pauses at her own choice of words, realizing how much death was all around them.
"I don't know how we're going to get back, though."
With a smile and gentle nod, Miss McGrady says,
"We can take care of that for you, lass, if you happen to have a spare shamrock in your bag."
Aisling smiles and reaches into her satchel.
"Never leave the glade without one, my pa always says."
She pulls out a crinkled four-leaf clover and hands it to Miss McGrady.
"That's a good girl. Always be prepared,"
she says, gripping the shamrock in her closed fist. Then, with a snap of her fingers, a swirling iridescent portal opens beside them.
"We'll have a chat with your parents about what happened here, too. It'd be a shame if a young girl was blamed for her guardian familiar doing what they do best."
"You know about my blessing?"
"I certainly do,"
she says before pulling up her sleeve to reveal her own Celtic labyrinth tattoo.
"Mine usually appears as a lion, but they all arrive in the same way."
She jabs Mr. McGrady in the ribs with her elbow and mutters,
I told you I saw green lightning. Thank you so much,
Aisling says.
I'd appreciate any help you're willing to offer. It's the least we can do after you helped give us our lives back,
says Miss McGrady. Aisling smiles and adds,
I can't wait to get our lives back, too, now that the humans won't want the poppy seeds anymore.
Mr. McGrady's brow creases, and a look of sadness spreads across his wrinkled face.
Oh, Aisling, I'm so sorry, but this won't stop the humans. This place is one of a great many warehouses where they do the exact same thing. Another location would be up and running by tomorrow to replace this one.
Oh,
despair starts flooding back in again, but Aisling is struck with an idea.
Do you know where those other locations are, Mr. McGrady?
Aye, a few of them anyway.
Could you show me on a map?
Whatever for, Miss O'Reilly?
He asks, stroking his salt and cinnamon beard.
If life can't go back to normal until these places are gone, maybe me and Clover can help.
She glances up at her towering teddy giant and smiles.
What do you say, Clover Bear? Would you like to go on more adventures with me?
Clover doesn't answer. He never does. But she can tell by the glimmer in his eyes that he'll stay by her side no matter where she goes.